You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 30 November. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're going to be chatting with Pietri Radenhuis, Brent Oil, but particularly Sasol, above its 200-day moving average for the first time in, about 2.5 years. Of course, back then, the share price was 450 Rand, not the current 100 and change. And then Charles Savage, he's CEO of Purple Group, and they had results out late on Friday. I want to chat Easy Equities and talk to results. I'm going to talk enabling a whole new generation of investors as their growth has surged under lockdown. Our Friday question, we asked you if you're buying unicorns. 12% yes, 27% no, 61% said, huh, what? No idea what unicorns are. There are startups that have a $1 billion valuation. MoneyWeb Now, brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines, business day. JP Morgan turns bullish on SA Inc. stocks. A double upgrading of SA shares from underweight to overweight. None of the neutral skipped that completely. The four companies that are in their top 10 for the region: Sibanye-Stillwater, MTN, Capitec, and Standard Bank. And then Business Insider, Black Friday flopped in SA this year, even as online did much better. So online boomed massively, but the in-store, and they get that from checking number of transactions going through. In-store fell more than online rose. And I wonder, and partly it's been a Black November to a degree, maybe consumers are waking up that it's not always so great, but I'm curious to see how that's going to play out for the rest of the festive season. What we've seen in previous years is Black Friday pulled some of the December sales earlier. Morning markets, US green, S&P was up 0.2 and NASDAQ up 0.9% on Friday. It was a half day as they were sort of still Thanksgiving. Asia red, Sydney off 0.8, Tokyo down 0.5%. Commodities red with gold at $1,774 an ounce. Rand, 1524. Top 40 opening call looking for a red opening, about 0.33% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Pietri Radenhuis. He is, of course, founder at Herenia Capital Advisors. Pietri, morning. Appreciate your time. I want to talk Sasol. Before we do, I suppose one of the key drivers is the oil price. For Sasol, it is Brent oil. Brent's the one that didn't go negative back in April, but still, it was sub-20 at one point. And it really does look as if a bull trend has now established itself in place with a potential target for Brent of perhaps as much as $60.
Morning. There's a couple of key sort of indicators. Firstly, it has been in a downtrend, as you mentioned, for some time, and particularly this year. It's actually quite an interesting dynamic that's busy happening in the oil market, and I think perhaps this year has skewed reality a little bit. If you look at production, primarily oil rig production, shale gas is a contributor, but as a percentage of the total market, it's not as big, as well as sort of green energy. It's also a contributor towards the energy, sort of total energy mix production, but it's really a very small piece. The majority of energy that we are getting is primarily coming from, good old Brent crude oil, right? Yeah. So if you look at the supply dynamic, it's been a bit skewed by what happened this year, mostly because we went into lockdown and there was just this demand side shock where oil price went negative because just nobody was using it. Everybody was at home. There was just so much of it floating around in containers. There was nowhere to put it, right?
Yeah.
It's not entirely a full story, though. If you look at our daily production versus our daily consumption, we are not producing enough oil to meet demand. That has been skewed, of course, this year because demand has been adversely affected. But as the world sort of starts to come back to normal and out of lockdown, this supply dynamic hasn't gone away, right?
Okay.
Over the medium term, it's sort of a logical assessment to say, well, look, once we start going back to normal, we're going to start seeing oil inventories draw, particularly from around the world outside of the US. Chinese oil demand is picking up again, and there's simply just not enough supply to meet all the demand. So it's sort of this natural balancing of the market that we potentially see higher oil prices.
Okay, so oil heading higher, and that then plays into Sasol. I mentioned in my intro, and this was something I picked up from one of your tweets, that Sasol is above the 200-day moving average for the first time in many, many years, although the price is a third what it was back in April 2018 when it was lost there. But you're looking quite bullish on the Sasol story. I mean, you wanted to break through, what, the 158-ish level, but it really could get back to really chunky levels on that price movement.
Yeah, and I think it's more than just, obviously the oil price is a big driver of the Sasol share price, but also the sentiment around Sasol, is obviously a massive driver. It's been very bad news with this Lake Charles situation. The share price has been in a two-year downtrend, I suppose largely because of it, as well as negative oil prices, or not negative oil prices, but pressure on oil prices. And I think a lot of that sort of bad news is now behind that. And if you look at it from a purely technical analysis perspective, for the first time, we're sort of in the process of making a higher low, and we're breaking that two-year or 200-day moving average, so that sort of two-year downtrend. So for the first time in 2 years, it does seem as though, there is a bullish trend busy establishing itself. Like you said, it does need to breach 158 Rand 40, or call it 160 Rand, to go and make a new high, to really sort of solidify that confirmation that we are entering into a bull phase. But I think there's two primary drivers there. One, all the sort of bad news that we can possibly have with Sasol. I mean, I say this, I don't know if it's true, but most of the bad news we can have with Sasol is out of the way. And two, we probably see higher energy prices going into next year and for the majority of next year, which will be supportive, of course, of the Sasol share price as well.
Yeah, and they still potentially got a rights issue, but perhaps that's going to be smaller than thought. If we look to offshore markets, your preferred there, Shell.
Shell is an interesting story as well. This sort of pins on that supply-demand dynamic in the market. So Shell's doing a number of things. One, it's busy preparing itself for green, right? Because that's just kind of the question that everybody goes, well, in 10 years from now, in the short term, yes, oil prices, $60 makes sense. It can get there. Sasol share price is going to go up. But what happens in 10 years from now when the European Union starts to ban petrol and diesel engines? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. In 10 years from now, you can't drive those things. Well, Shell is interesting in the sense that they've got, I'm not sure what the number is, it's over 30,000 charge points for electric vehicles that they've basically bought.
Okay, so moving into that EV space.
Absolutely. They are they're investing heavily into solar farms as well. They plan to be the biggest energy producer, independent energy producer on Earth in 10 years from now, right? So it's an interesting space. Obviously, they will benefit greatly from oil and the associated sort of chemicals industry that comes around oil, plastics, and all sorts of other stuff, and the generation of, the production of fuel and that kind of thing. But they're also really sort of moving into the energy production space where, they'll be independent power producers, I guess, on a global scale. And they've started investing into there's a business that does robotics that they bought. I'm not 100% sure what that's about. I guess we'll see. But, I think what they're doing is they're investing quite heavily into these, because they've got a network of petrol stations, right?
Yeah, so, and it's that they missed. And I can't help thinking, I often think that Sasol missed a trick here. Instead of Lake Charles, Sasol should have gone and built themselves some green energy, spent the billions on that. We'll leave that there. Peter Radenhurst, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. A question this morning for you is, Sasol, are you buying it? Are you selling it? Or are you simply just staying away from it?
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore, while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Charles Savage. He is, of course, the CEO of Purple Group and Easy Equities. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Purple Group. Results to year-end August, revenue up 65% for the group, costs up 16%, and of course that then boosts profit from a loss of $9.5 million to a profit of 14.4. Charles, morning, appreciate the time. Strong results. You were sort of at that point, if I go back to a year ago, if I go back to February, you were on that tipping point of getting to break, even getting into that profit. The pandemic, I suppose, really did help and has accelerated that growth under lockdown, although it couldn't have been easy for you and your team.
Hello, Simon, and hopefully you're a happy shareholder this morning. I mean, as you've rightly said, the sort of signs were there that we were going to be profitable. I mean, in February, we were very close to break even, and we still had the Satrix in our conversion mm-hmm. from the old platform to the new one, which everyone knew about. So profitability was in our sights, but we certainly didn't have any foresight of what was going to happen from March all the way through to today. And the pandemic just, you know, it was an unexpected tipping point for the group and certainly fast-forwarded the future for digital businesses like ours and meant that in COVID conditions, we needed to scale the business at sort of four times the rate that we'd ever scaled it before. Which proved to be a really tough and challenging opportunity for our team, and hats off to them. I mean, they did an incredible job to scale a business remotely from home and deliver, you know, contained costs and really capture the revenue opportunity that came along with the pandemic for us.
Are you and your team still working from home, or you're back in the offices in Earl Street?
No, we're mostly at home. Funny enough, I mean, okay. Even though we can go back, but it's interesting. I think the future of work will be more like this. I really don't think we're going to ever go back to work the way we did. And we sort of left it up to the staff who wants to go in and who doesn't. And about 70% are going in regularly. At only, you know, the rest of us and 30% staying at home, but no one's going back 5 days a week, you know, 28 days a month type stuff.
During that lockdown, I mean, obviously significant increased activity. Were you seeing clients doing more trading activity than they typically had, or was that boost mostly coming from the new clients being onboarded?
Yeah, so I mean, we definitely saw higher levels of activity than we've seen before, and that's normal in volatile times.
Yeah.
Last time we saw activity like this was 2008, and that's natural. Volatility obviously drives turnover. But the real magic for us was just the onboarding of new customers and their capital. I mean, to give you some insights into those numbers, in February, we reported that we were onboarding about 300 customers a day and I think 250 million rand in new capital flows a month.
Mm-hmm.
During COVID, we averaged an onboarding of about 2,000 customers a day. And we were onboarding at one point, we thought we'd get to a billion in new capital in a month, but we averaged about 700 million rand in new capital a month. And that hasn't let up. You know, we've had months that have been around, you know, 600 million and all the way up to, I think, 890 million in 1 month. So the real story is new customers arriving with new capital to invest in the market.
And seemingly from those stats you're suggesting there and saying it hasn't let up, I mean, obviously we get, you know, the collapsing market that attracts people in, you know, hard lockdown, there wasn't much else to do, but that trend has kind of sustained and that would suggest a lot of word of mouth and just a general increasing of interest around stock markets and investing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the magic in our acquisition is 100% our customers. So, you know, more than 60% of our customers come from customer referrals,
mm-hmm.
which means we've got to have happy clients. And COVID, you know, there wasn't a lot to talk about other than get focused on the news. And a lot of news was about what was going on in the stock market. So we certainly benefited from that. I think the other thing that has certainly helped us is we've laid down partnership rails that have supported our own growth, so our own brand growth in Easy Equities. And mm-hmm. those partnership rails mean that we get to target other market segments without our marketing money. And that's benefited us as well. So when our own brand isn't producing the results in terms of onboarding, then there's a very good chance that one of our partnership rails are going to deliver. And as you know, we've had a great partnership with Satrix, which actually turns five, I think, tomorrow. I think 1st of December is the anniversary of Satrix, which is now a five-year relationship. And, you know, they've got over 70,000 customers. We'll have a significantly different demographic to ours. They're older and wealthier than our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And then after our year end, 31st of August, we laid down the partnership rail with Capitec. And that's been live for just 6 weeks. And already Capitec customers have linked to 50,000 Capitec customers have linked their banking app to an Easy Equities account. And that partnership has really just only started. So, you know, Easy Equities is doing really well on its own and just acquiring its customers. Satrix is doing really well in acquiring customers. And Capitec, I've got a feeling, although they're just scratching the surface right now. And so that's a really exciting prospect for us going into the new year.
Yeah, I mean, 50,000, what, they've probably got 5 million people on that app. So, you know, 50,000 is a great number, but it's early days. To change tack a bit, one of the slurs I see on Twitter all the time is people referring to Robinhooders. And this is usually, you know, the old school investors, traders, brokers, and they look at the Robinhooders and think these kids don't know what they're doing. The truth is, and we've spoken about this, is that they absolutely do know what they're doing. Your clients might not have CFAs and all the rest, but they're, you know, the average person is smart enough to actually work this out and ultimately make profits from it.
Yeah, Simon, and guys like you have made all the difference. You know, education has been democratized around investing. So, you know, whereas the dialogue even 10 years ago was very different because smartphones and data costs were preventing people from getting involved and getting educated, importantly. That's changed radically. And so, you know, the old guard will sit there and say, oh, these kids are too stupid to invest. Well,
yeah.
You know, what they need to do is they need to come and sit with me, and I'll happily show them what the average client portfolio looks like. And these guys are running core satellite portfolios where more than 50% of their money is invested in ETFs, diversified locally and internationally. And then they have sort of high conviction investments in between 10 and 20 stocks that they've fallen in love with. And that's no different to what the rest of the rest of the world's best money managers are doing with their money. And yeah, they're doing fabulously well. They're beating index returns. They're engaging and educating themselves. And so the ecosystem that supports investing in the last 10 years has grown up and democratized access to education. And as a result of that, our platform just looks right time, right place. But it really is thanks to guys like yourself and many others that have played such an inspirational, educational role in driving this democratization. And in the result, we've got super smart, savvy investors who, frankly, are never going to go back to the old world.
They're not. And truthfully, that, you know, that investing, and I'm living proof of it, this is not rocket science. A lot of it is just common sense. It's, you know, as you say, it's the core satellite. It's brands you like. It's brands you understand. And it has been that massive shift that needed the technology to come along at the same point. And it's almost in a weird sense. We had the getting people smarter. The tech came along. And then the pandemic has almost been that perfect storm of the three together has fundamentally forever changed this landscape.
Yeah, it's funny how in the storyline of every disruptive business opportunity or, you know, event, there's always an unexpected event that no one planned for. And COVID is that event. You know,
yeah.
It's fast forwarded so many things, and you know, it's hard to say that COVID has been a positive experience. I mean,
sure.
I know that a lot of businesses have been under a lot of pressure. But for me, the thing that is positive that's come out of COVID is that the future of work and the future of investing will never be the same again. And it's such an exciting prospect because if I was a 25-year-old entering the workplace or entering the investment game, I just wish I was a 25 and not a 47-year-old doing it. So yeah, it'll never be the same again. I think what you're seeing with the digital disruptors, especially internationally, is that shareholders are also recognizing that it's never going to be the same again. And that's why you see as Amazons and Alibabas and Teslas all performing at, you know, stellar kind of returns. But I think the real message is that we're not going back, you know, to walking the aisles, and we're not going back to how we did business before.
And unfortunately, we're not going back to 25 either. I'm with you. I wouldn't mind being 25 again. Charles Savage, CEO of Purple Group. Appreciate the early morning time. The show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial service provider, license number 50483. A reminder of our poll, we're chatting Cecil with Pietri. Your view on Cecil, buying, selling, or are you staying away from it entirely? That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app, and podcast available again on the website or the app or wherever you get great podcasts from. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.